നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യം നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദൈവം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയത് നസ്തപ്രേഷു ഭദ്രേഷു നിത്യം ഭഗവത് സേവയ ഭഗവത്യുത്തമ ശ്ലോകേ ഭക്തി ഭവതി നൈഷ്ഠികീ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Reading today from Canto 4, Chapter 29, Verse 81. Prachina Bahi Rajasihi Praja Sarga Birakshane Adishya Putran Agamat Tapase Kapilashramam Prachinabahi Rajasi Prajasarga Birakshane Adishyaputran Agamat Tapase Kapilashramam Prachina Bahi Rajasi Prajasarga Virakshane Adishyaputran Agamat Tapase Kapilashramam Prachina Bahi Rajasi Tapase Kapilashramam Prachina Bahi King Prachina Bahi Raja Rishihi The Saintly King Praja Sarga The mass of citizens. Abhirakshane. To protect. Adishya. After ordering. Putran. His sons. Agamat. Departed. Tapase. For undergoing austerities. Kapila Ashramam to the holy place known as Kapila Ashram. Translation. In the presence of his ministers, the saintly King Prachina Bahi left orders for his sons to protect the citizens. He then left home and went off to undergo austerities in a holy place known as Kapilashram. Please repeat. In the presence of his ministers, King Prachina Bahi left orders for his sons to protect the citizens. He then left home and went off to undergo austerities in a holy place known as Kapila Ashram. Purport. The word Prajasarga is very important in this verse. When the saintly king Prachina Bahi was induced by the great sage Narada to leave home and take to the devotional service of the Lord, his sons had not yet returned from their austerities in the water. However, he did not wait for their return, but simply left messages to the effect that his sons were to protect the mass of citizens. According to Viraragava Acharya, such protection means organizing the systems into the specific divisions of the four varnas and four ashramas. It was the responsibility of the royal order to see that the citizens were following the regulative principles of the four varnas, namely Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and the ashrams, namely Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. It is very difficult to rule citizens in a kingdom without organizing this Varnashrama Dharma. To rule the mass of citizens in a state and keep them in a complete progressive order is not possible simply by passing laws every year in a legislative assembly. The Varnashram Dharma is essential in a good government. One class of men, the Brahmanas, must be intelligent and brahminically qualified. Another class must be trained in administrative work, Kshatriya. Another in mercantile business, Vaishya. And another simply in labor, Shudra. These four classes of men are already there according to nature. But it is the government's duty to see that all four of these classes follow the principles of their varnas methodically. This is called abhirakshana, or protection. It is significant that when Maharaj Prachinabarhi was convinced of the goal of life through the instructions of Narada, he did not wait even a moment to see his son's return, but left immediately. There were many things to be done upon the return of his sons, but he simply left them a message. He knew what his prime duty was. He simply left instructions for his sons and went off for the purpose of spiritual advancement. This is the system of Vedic civilization. Sridhar Swami informs us that Kapila Ashram is located at the confluence of the Ganges and the Bay of Bengal, a place now known as Gangasagara. This place is still famous as a place of pilgrimage, and many millions of people gather there every year on the day of Makara Sankranti and take bath. It is called Kapilashram because of Lord Kapila's living there to perform his austerities and penances. Lord Kapila propounded the Sankhya system of philosophy. Prachinabarhi Rajasihi Prajasaga Pirakshane Adishaputran Agamat Tapase Kapilashramam. In the presence of his ministers, the saintly King Prachinabarhi left orders for his sons to protect the citizens. He then left home and went off to undergo austerities in a holy place known as Kapilashram. Omagyana Timarandasa Tinandana Salakaya Chakshuramilitang Jaina Tasmai Shi Guraveyu Namaha Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. It's a big subject in ISKCON at the moment, the whole idea of succession. That is, some of us who are getting on in years are beginning to realize that we're not going to be around for much longer. Sometimes as people get older, they get surprised at old age. But of course we know it's going to happen. I was encouraged yesterday to read in the Gita, the Uddhava Gita, that actually they define middle age from 45 to 60, no, from 20, 25 till 60. And that old age begins at 60. That was encouraging. I thought middle age finished earlier than 60. I've still got a year to go. In other words, there's embodied within this whole system of Varnashram is the idea that we have to somehow empower other people. There is intrinsically within Varnashram that idea that we have to delegate and pass on somehow or other. And it's also interesting that abhirakshana, or protection, is defined as actually guiding everyone according to the principles of Varnashram. There are different understandings, I think, within ISKCON as to what Varnashram means. There are some who think perhaps it means what I call the cows and carrots program. That is simply about what some of us call simple living, or simple living. That may be a part of Varnashram, certainly, and Srila Prabhupada did give instructions on what would be a better economic basis for society, certainly. But actually Varnashram is more than that, and it is a contentious subject, certainly, as to whether we as Vaishnavas are actually above Varnashram or whether it is relevant to us. Now, generally speaking, our tradition is based on dharma, a very important principle, dharma. Not easy to translate into English. There's no single word, and that's sometimes the problem. You'll notice when Srila Prabhupada translates, sometimes there'll be a short verse, and Srila Prabhupada gives this long translation. He's been criticized that by some scholars for that. However, one possible rationale behind that is actually that you can't always translate some Sanskrit words appropriately into the English language, because not only is that word not there, practically speaking, that concept isn't there. Yeah? Right, because different languages, different peoples will have different understandings, different world views. So their worldview is reflected very often by the language they have. We've already mentioned that actually in English, the word for love is rather broad and can be applied from anything to love of hamburger to love of God. But in Sanskrit there are so many words: priti, prema, bhava, bhakti. There are many different words. There was more a more nuanced understanding of what love is. So dharma is quite difficult to translate. It's sometimes translated as religion. But if we ever study, and of course some of our students will be studying the different world religions, we come to an understanding that not only are the different religions, and we may appreciate they're all actually aiming at the same God, but actually their understanding of religion is quite different. So to translate, to actually call ourselves a religious movement is sometimes perhaps not the best. Actually, Srila Prabhupada warned us about becoming just a religious movement. He made objections, yeah, at times. So the word dharma, there's a couple of meanings really. The root dri means to sustain, that which sustains. There's a lot of talk about sustainability, isn't there? We hear this wonderful phrase, sustainable economic growth. Rather paradoxical. There is an idea that somehow or other growth can go on eternally. Of course, with a linear worldview, we probably want that, but of course we know with our cyclical worldview that that's not possible. I think in the words of a pop song I remember when I was in my adolescent years, what goes up must come down, spinning wheel gotta go around. Yeah. Ride a painted pony, let the spinning wheel spin. Yeah, it seems to actually, there was some allusion I think to our own philosophy there. And we see in now with ecological awareness, perhaps we're becoming a little more, worldview might be tuned a little more finely to that. The idea that actually the seasons revolve, everything goes in cycles. So this sustainable economic growth is not really possible. It's an attempt to mix passion and goodness, I think, in perhaps a way that's not possible. In other words, the word sustainability is applied to the mode of goodness, that which sustains. Therefore, this whole principle of dharma is to sustain that which sustains us. Another meaning is that which is intrinsic to something. So Srila Prabhupada gives the example that sugar is sweet, fire is hot. I remember having a graphic experience of that some years ago in the 70s. We were doing Sankirtan and we were staying in a what we would call Hindu temple in Leicester. I remember there were cats residing there, and we got up probably about 4 o'clock on travelling Sankirtan, probably about 5:30, this long-haired pundit got up and was chanting rather ominously, Om Namo Shivaya, Om Namo Shivaya. Anyway, we went to the kitchen to cook some halva, and we noticed they had some Tate and Lyle. It's a famous brand of sugar, been around for ages, probably since the days of the British Empire. And there were bags of sugar in there. So we made some halva with the sugar after someone made it during class, I think. And then we made some halva, and then we took our halva for breakfast. Regrettably, it wasn't sweet. It was salty. Yes. Later on, we left on Sankirtan. We were driving too fast, so I blew up the van on the motorway. As we were waiting for the repairs, we took the halva and gave it to some cows in the field. And they were licking it, because they like to lick salt. That's the story. But the point is, we didn't think this sugar was somewhat salty sugar. We didn't think, oh, this sugar is somehow salty. We thought it's not sugar, it's salt. Why? Because the dharma of sugar is to be sweet. You can't separate it out, so there's no question of thinking this was sugar, even though the packaging said sugar. The fact is it was actually salt. There was no why? Because the two are interlinked. You cannot separate them out. So when you're talking about dharma, another meaning is that which cannot be separated from the self. What can't be separated? And Srila Prabhupada, of course, defines that as seva, service. We cannot give up service. Actually, loving service we cannot give up. Those things cannot be given up. by the soul. Everyone must serve one way or another, and there must be some affection in that service as well. So really, Dharma means those duties which sustain us according to our innate propensities. And these abilities are innate. Many people will criticize Varnashram because it's associated with caste. And it's a big issue these days, caste. Here's another controversy for us regarding Varnashram. What is the relationship between caste and Varnashram? Many Hindu people are actually now divorcing themselves from caste, saying it's merely a sociological phenomenon. It's not part of the religion. It is true, actually, interestingly, caste does extend beyond the Hindu tradition. It's prevalent in other traditions. You'll even find many have converted to Christianity in India, or beyond, or in other places, still follow some form of caste system. It's not just part of the Hindu system. It goes beyond it. However, we will find in the Rig Veda there is mention of the four Vedas, the four Varnas. There they're compared to the head, the arms. Generally there it says thighs rather than belly. And the Shudras are compared to the legs from the knees down, I guess. A bit of an alternative there as to which part of the body the Vaishyas are compared to. Personally, I think it goes from here up to here. I compromised. Because in a sense, it's about the... Why? Because it's about production. This is a very interesting metaphor. There's meaning to it. Therefore, generally, that nourishment and reproduction goes on between the waist and the knees somewhere. So one, it's actually the idea of the belly also being that Vaishya class is an important one. But the point is here, it's actually there, it's enshrined within what many consider to be the first Vedic literature, the first Veda, the Rig Veda. So we can't really divorce ourselves from it, or those who follow the tradition can't divorce themselves from it as merely sociological phenomenon. It's actually there in the religious scriptures. So Dharma means that which sustains. And there are two types of Dharma, Sanatana Dharma and Varnashram Dharma. Actually, when Srila Prabhupada talks about the Hindu tradition, of course, he very often, this is another contentious issue. We've got a lot of contentious issues today. Issues which are somewhat difficult to understand. What is our relationship to Hinduism? And there's some of us who actually would deny any relationship whatsoever. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, makes many statements in that regard, largely regarding the fact that actually the self is different from the body. And because we're different from the body, therefore any designation is illusory. It's not real. Just as when we're driving in a car, it's illusory to identify with that car. But we do it. Yeah? If we're driving in an old car, some of us think, oh, I wish I had a better car. When we see the Mercedes go past us, or the BMWs, and we're in a rickety old car, I've had experience, you think, oh, I wish I had one. Or, if we are in a BMW, then we feel some kinship with the other BMWs. Yeah? When I was 11 or 12 years old, they built the first motorway, the M1. You call them autobahns here in Germany, they're autobahns. I don't know what they're in Belgium. What are they? Motorways? Anyway, you have those fast roads. They built the first one in the 60s. So my father took us, I think, down to London from Birmingham. And we're excited to be on this motorway. But any cars that were the same make as ours, me and my brother were waving to. Yeah? So immediately you think, somehow there's a connection. But there's no connection. Why? Because you get out of one car and you get into another. You sell one car, right? And you buy another one. Either you're going up or you're going down. But you sell another one. I had the experience of, as a student, hitchhiking and getting a lift once with, it was popular at that time. Now, of course, now people realize the dangers of hitchhiking. But we got a lift with one lorry driver and quickly associate that, talking of varnas and different types of people and different propensities and different gunas, we learned something of the rather seedy life of the lorry drivers. Really, they've got their own kind of culture, and if we can call it culture, I don't know. Anyway, you learn after a while that every kind of social group has its kind of culture. Even the criminal underclass has its culture. As devotees, we also, as sanctan devotees, have opportunity occasionally to be arrested and to spend a night in jail, and then to meet some of the residents in the morning and to learn a little bit of what they were speaking about. Basically, it's who in and who's out, and who is in, and therefore who's what's happening to his wife, and so on. I mean, it's really, they've got their own talk, their own subject matters. So this also, this lorry driver, we learned that they really don't like cars too much. No, actually, they don't mind cars too much, but they hate caravans. They hate caravans. Cars are okay, and lorries are great. So we have friendship with the lorry drivers. Somehow the, so friends, enemies are neutral. That was it. But we also learned later on by meeting some other lorry drivers that some of them actually not only had cars, but perhaps secretly at home had caravans. So they can get out of the lorry and they can drive the car or the caravan. So this is an example. We do it in everyday life. We identify with that vehicle. And similarly, we identify with this body. And unfortunately, that identification is extended to religion. And in fact, many who are anti-religious will criticize religion for being the greatest cause of discord in the world. But according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, that is Dharma Koitava. That's cheating religion. In other words, unless we have actually come to the level of understanding that I am not this body, then we're still in illusion, and our concepts of religion are cheating. Strong words. So Dharma begins, well, there's two types of Dharma. One is Sanatana Dharma, which is connected to the constitutional position of the living being. And that dharma is service to the Supreme Lord. But there's another type of dharma which actually acknowledges what kind of body we've got. Because despite our spiritual equality and despite having sentiment for equality, the fact is we have different bodies. It cannot be denied. We do not get equality by making ladies into lorry drivers. I'm not saying you can't drive lorries at your peril. But the point is, simply by artificially trying to juggle things, we cannot get that equality. That equality is only there on that spiritual level. And that is the first lesson of the Bhagavad Gita. Na tve vahang jatu na sang na twenjanat. Nataiva Dinadipa. Nataiva Napa Vishavak Sarvevanga Tatparam. Did I get that right? Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings and soldiers, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. That is the beginning. I mean, this is so important. Krishna puts that point right at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. First he tells Arjuna, you shouldn't lament. And then he gives the reason, why are you lamenting? Because you are thinking, I am this body and these are my kinsmen and I've got to kill them. So this is really the key to all knowledge. Krishna didn't begin with God, saying, I'm God and you should listen to me. He began with understanding the self, very instructive, understanding the self. So we put emphasis on that Sanatan Dharma, but what of Varnashram Dharma? How is that relevant to us? Actually, Srila Prabhupada explains in the first chapter of the Gita that even the Kula Dharma, family duties, are part of the Sanatan Dharma in the Vedic tradition. Kula Dharma, family duty. And he explains, why? Because these principles are part of the Sanatan Dharma because they are enduring truths. They are those kind of laws that you cannot retract. Someone has defined that sometimes those who are not explicitly devotees talk of natural laws, Sanatan Dharma. In fact, the early word was Rita in the Vedic tradition, the laws of nature. It kind of evolved to become the idea of Dharma, they say. Natural laws, you cannot revoke them. It's not that if you're in an aeroplane and the aeroplane is about to crash, you can revoke the law of gravity. Gravity will act. So similarly, these other laws are acting. And those laws mean that actually there are three gunas and we're situated according to those three gunas. Therefore, in any society, there will be those who are predominantly in ignorance, those who've got a mixture of ignorance and passion, those who are situated in a mixture of passion and goodness, or sometimes we say passion, and there are those who are situated in the mode of goodness. They'll be everywhere. And therefore, to protect society must be organized. It's interesting. Srila Prabhupada, what did he say? We got a little bit of interest from this. To rule the mass of citizens in a state and keep them in a complete progressive order is not possible simply by passing laws every year in a legislative assembly. It doesn't work, does it? Even the GBC tries to pass laws. Thou shalt not eat chocolate. And no one follows? Not that laws are not possible. No, you know, I'm not saying the GBC shouldn't pass law, but there's something else here. And Srila Prabhupada gives the example. He says, you get a group of dogs and you say to them, my dear dogs, we now must be democratic. Right? We have to have a system. It won't work. In other words, the problem with modern society is very much that we're now looking to control moral issues through systems and mechanical means, not through individual morality. I think that's generally reflects the way we're going in the world. We don't emphasize that individual morality that's needed in society. And it's important because in Varnashram, not only was society divided for work purposes, but there are particular values associated with each ashram. As well as values that are common to all living beings. So that is the system. Actually, we've got experience in the UK that we used to have a very strong class system, very similar to the caste system, extremely similar. Sometimes they call it a feudal system. It's now pretty well gone. And the idea is, and of course it's preached mainly by the upper class, that we should have a classless system. Right? But what's happening? Two things, really. One, the working class is losing any sense of moral direction because they used to have codes of morality, even in that class. And secondly, we're creating another class system. What is that class system? Wealth. Purely wealth. Economics. And it wasn't based purely on wealth previously. Even if you go to British society, you will find there is the idea of pedigree. Pedigree? Pedigree is what a dog has. Who's its mother? Who's its they do that for dogs still. I know my mother breeds dogs. So you see the dame, the sire. The dame is the mother. The sire is the father. And then the granddame. And it goes right on up for generations. You're breeding dogs. But then with humans, no, we don't bother anymore. There's no consideration. But there was consideration. You know, is this a suitable spouse for my son or daughter? So it's there in any society. How is it relevant to us? Varnashram, what is it about? What is going to sustain us in spiritual life? In other words, what kind of contribution am I going to make to the Krishna consciousness movement, taking account of what my propensities are, what my desires are even? That's okay, we can look at them. We shouldn't be surprised if we have desires. Nor should we be surprised if they're not always pure. It's okay. What do we expect? There are four types of living entity. Take shelter of Krishna. Chatur, Vidar, Bhajante, Mam. There's four types. But somehow or other, sustainability. How are we going to make a commitment to Krishna consciousness for this one lifetime? That's important. Because we need to be sustained. We need to be enthusiastic. And therefore to be rightly situated within this world according to our propensities by Varna and by Ashram is essential for us all. And it actually says in the Shastra, if you're not situated according to Varna and Ashram, you cannot make spiritual advancement. Of course, sometimes we may not be quite properly situated and we can still carry on. But the principle is we should be materially well situated to the extent that this helps us to actually progress in spiritual life. That will keep us encouraged. We don't want shooting stars in ISKCON. You know shooting stars? It comes and it burns and it's out, right? We have experience in ISKCON that sometimes the devotee comes, they rise to great heights, and then they quickly fade away. That's not sustainability. We need to somehow sustain our practice of Krishna consciousness. That means, what is Varnashram for us? Let us at least understand that we have particular propensities and that it's useful to be engaged according to those propensities. Or to put it another way, all of us have something special that we can offer to Krishna. All of us have some talent that Krishna's given us, and therefore we should use it in his service as the lamp is offered to the sun. He's given us those talents, but let's offer them back. And the other thing is, we will feel encouraged and fulfilled and sustained more if we're engaged properly. And therefore it is a duty of us to make sure that, especially if we're leaders, or we've all got leadership capacity in some way, that we engage others according to their propensity. That is what Varnashram means. That's the principle. We have different propensities and we should be engaged according to those propensities. That is an important principle. It is part of the Sanatana Dharma. And we should take note of these principles. If we could just do that, can we imagine, I'd like us to reflect, that everyone who comes to this movement finds out what their real strengths are, that thing that they can do brilliantly, that service where we can see that verse from the Gita, I am the ability in man. What a wonderful movement it would be. It is a wonderful movement already, but it would be so much more of an improvement if all of us could be engaged according to that propensity. And actually where we make that dedication through those skills. This is Varnashram. Kia. it's mentioned that actually society has to be regulated through that. And actually, if we look at many of the disturbances that go on in our own society, even though some of them pass as theological debates, a lot of them are to do with the social interactions that go on. We cannot, in my own experience of reading Srila Prabhupada's books, he never fell into this, what I call, trap of actually saying that we should have unorganized religion. He doesn't, you know, we hear that a lot. I don't like organized religion. As if somehow or other our spirituality has to go on completely separate from the society. That's, in a sense, that would be desirable, that actually we could carry on whatever's going on. But the point is, most of us, particularly if we're not situated in the mode of goodness yet, will be much affected by the social environment we live in. Therefore, there is no escape from getting those social issues right. I remember in the early days, we thought we could go back to Godhead, a little like King Prachinabarhi, kind of leaving a message behind, dear mum and dad, you're not my mum and dad, and we'd be out. Yeah? And we tried to remain celibate, and of course there's great credence to remaining celibate if we can. That is still the desirable path, if we can. If not, we get married. But actually, as much as we tried to avoid that, or at least when we tried to make 100% of the brahmacharya, it didn't work. And then we got married. And then as soon as you get married, everything social comes along. You've got to deal with all those issues. You have children, you need education. Therefore, we've got to have not only a good education, but the best education in the world. Otherwise, we're failing. And everything else that goes with society has to be there. It has to be. We can't avoid it. Even if we personally avoid it, we don't get married. Still, the concern of the leader is, how are the people protected? That is the thought. There's a wonderful story, just to finish. When the Brahmins killed King Vena, because they were Brahmins, they were independent. They had no personal desire to kill King Vena. And generally the Brahmins don't kill, do they? Marish? Generally? Not the duty of a Brahmin. In fact, when I think it was Vishvamitra, or was it Vishishta? Vishvamitra or Vishnu? I always get mixed up between them. I think it was Vishvamitra, came. He wanted to kill Taraka and other demons. He came to Dasarath and asked him. Of course, at that point, Dasarath greeted him, Oistam yattat punajanma jayayu. This is civilization. He didn't ask him, my dear sage Vishishta, how are you? How's your health? It would have been an insult. How's your health? How are you doing? He didn't ask him, how's business? How's it going? Punajanma jayayo. In your attempts to overcome punajanma, repeated birth, and this is civilization. Every greeting, there's different this is sophistication. By the way, if anyone... We should be very careful about thinking that Krishna consciousness is simplistic. It's simple, but it's not. It's very sophisticated in some ways. It takes great nuance of understanding and behavior. That we greet people differently. When you greet a businessman, you do say, "How's business?" A little bit of a smile. That's how you, if you're in that field. So when he met, then so he came and he asked, and he actually promised. This is Vedic system. Whatever you want, I will do. That was the system, the Chachas to the Brahmins. Anyway, he was getting into difficulty, because then Vishwamitra said, "I want Ram and Lakshman, to come and kill the demons. And of course, Dasharatha changed his mind. And Vishwamitra got very heavy with him. Said, "You've given your word. Can't." So they went and that's generally the standard. Why? He could have killed them with his Brahma Tejas. He's got that power. Because the Brahman Shakti is higher than the Kshatriya's power. He could have killed them, but it wasn't his dharma. So therefore the Brahmins must always avoid being violent. In fact, when a Brahmin has to take up another service, he should take up the service of a Vaishya in an emergency. Because he shouldn't take up the service of a Kshatriya because there's violence involved. So see how important non-violence is for those who are in the mode of goodness. And yet, in this instance, when Vena was there, Srila Prabhupada explains, they were so concerned for the protection of the people that they were willing to transgress their own duties, which proves they were real Brahmins, because they were concerned for the welfare of others. That is the sign of a Brahmin, real Pakka Brahmin. Not that I quote some verses or whatever. The real essence of it is the welfare of others. The Vedic aphorism, let the whole world be happy. That was the concern. But the interesting thing is, they actually killed Vena in order to establish a king and a government, because they realized that without an appropriate social system, you cannot make spiritual advancement. So the Brahmins themselves may be separate, may be independent, but generally for those of us who are not on that level, we are so affected by the social environment we live in that there must be a good, therefore we have to get together our social system in ISKCON as a perfect society and to take their responsibility. There is no way round it. Our business is not, like King Prachinibarhi, to run off and say, bye-bye, I'm going back to the spiritual world. Our business is to set up systems here that future generations can actually come and be liberated, and our own welfare, that's up to Krishna. So we can't avoid all these challenges that come by being in the material world. Of course, we're not in the material world, we're in the spiritual world, in Krishna's temple. But if we can't get together a perfect society now, what will we do in the spiritual world? Therefore, it is really incumbent on us to apply some of these principles in Krishna consciousness for the protection. And someone actually said, we were having a conversation, we said, what happens if we come back? Which mother is going to give me birth? Which society is going to educate me? We shouldn't want to come back, but there is a chance. Even if we're a little selfish, we should think, you know, how will the society be going on? And this is the value, by the way, the value also of women. It is such a valuable function they're playing in this world. We shouldn't underestimate that. To nurture next generations. Such an important function. So Varnashram, there may be different stratifications according to Varna and Ashram, but everyone is important. They have a unique contribution to pay to Krishna. We should not devalue anyone. At the same time, there are different positions. Questions or comments? Yes.
I just want to comment that in the long run, it's more done if you're engaged in the,
yeah,
because you get a 120% value of the person. So in the grand scale, if you are able to do this,
yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, of course, we will do the needful, whatever's needed to done, even if it's against our propensity. But in another sense, if we unpack that word, that phrase, do the needful, what is needful is to make sure that actually we do engage people according to their propensities. Do we have experience of that? Of sometimes being situated in a position that really is not conducive to us? I mean, I remember being sent out to sell Hong Kong paintings, and I had to sell lives. And I remember, you know, I started off Monday feeling reasonably spiritually strong. By Friday evening, I was finished. Yeah, it was a horrible experience. Of course, I may be personally to blame for much of that, but still, in my mind, it does show, you know, the need to be actually engaged. We should like our service. Believe it or not, yeah, we should actually think, I want to do this for Krishna, I want to do that for Krishna. It shouldn't be just, Prabhu, I'll just do whatever I'm told. Yeah, I mean, you know, whatever my spiritual master wants, yeah, I mean, I've got no personal desire, just, you know, just what Krishna wants me to do. No! I want to do this for, Srila Prabhupada says in one lecture, when you start to say, I want to do this for Krishna, I want to do that for Krishna, it's a sign of advancement. Doesn't matter, there's some choice there. Of course there's choice. Actually, that's fine. In the spiritual world, that's how it is. You're engaged according to your propensity to serve Krishna. No one's saying, there's not kind of pieces of rock coming down the mountain saying, thou shalt be a peacock. That's not quite the way it is. Just as here, we engage according to our, you know, if we like a particular hobby, we do that hobby. So actually, it's actually, for us who are kind of conditioned, it's hard to understand the freedom that's there, because we're struggling mainly to overcome material desires. But there, once one has perfect freedom, one can serve Krishna how one desires. Of course, that desire is pure. So this free will is an important principle. Go on, take it further. He was doing the work of a brahmana by putting out the garbage, yes. Cleanliness? This is where the caste system has got it wrong. I want to be clean, but I'm not prepared to do it. That's not a brahman. That's not a brahman. Brahman is someone who, you know, we've defined brahman. A brahman, wherever he goes or she goes, it becomes cleaner, right? You have them in your room, you have them in your house, it's cleaner than it was. Why? They clean. If necessary, they clean. If one actually tolerates dirt, does that mean because I'm tolerant, I'm a Brahmin? Some of us think it does. Some of us do. That's not Brahman. Can't tolerate dirt. Immediately clean. Yeah. Must be spotless. Your Baba gives the story of you go to Calcutta, you know what Calcutta's like. I mean, it's just pandemonium all around, and it's not clean. But you'll see a Brahman, he's got to do his puja, he's cleared the space, and he's impeccable. Actually, you notice it, don't you, sometimes when you're driving from perhaps the airport to Mayapur or to Vrindavan, you see these really rough places, but you see people dressed. Personal hygiene is good, even in not such nice conditions. Of course, there should be public hygiene should be good as well. And why isn't it good? There's an idea I can't clean. That's where you know, the caste system has gone wrong. It's become rigid. Someone else has to do it for me. I can't clean. No, if it needs cleaning, you do it. Set the example. Leader means example, acharya. If I have to set the example, I'll do it. It may be generally that if we're in the college, we've got academic duties and blah, 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 blah. Someone else will do the cleaning. We can't do it all. But still, we should be prepared, as you say, do the needful, to do that. Because really, leadership is leading from the front. It's setting the example. It must be. And Prabhupada did that. He showed us so many, how to do many things, even cleaning. One final point, then we'll go. Should Brahmins be punctual? Yes. I'll be quick.
In regard to that one should be engaged according to one's identity, and Fred will explain that the magician comes up with so much, and all the time he knew he wanted to be a cook. And he was like very good at that, and he was trying again and again. For years he was imagining he was a cook. So then, when finally he decided, okay, now I'm going to become a cook, he transformed all our kitchen into a spiritual cook. And he did the chicken, still doing the chicken better than he did the other people.
Yeah, good. Of course, some is happy. Of course, sometimes the guru may require us to do something, then we have to do that. There may be some discussion also, but still, yeah, occasionally. But you're right, yeah. Propensity, very important. It's hard to change our nature. Actually, we're going to be stuck with our nature, basically. We have to manage it. Our business is to manage our nature and to become Krishna conscious at the same time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. Yeah. Okay.